Good morning.
Whether you're joining us online or here in the church, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I am Reverend Chris Jimerson, the lead minister. I am white, clinging to my early 60s. My pronouns are he, him. It is a joy to be with you today. It is my great pleasure to introduce our guest worship leader today, Dr. Elias Ortega. Dr. Ortega serves as president of Meadville Lombard Theological School, which is rooted in our Unitarian Universalist tradition and is my alma mater. He has served a number of leadership roles within Unitarian Universalism and is an interdisciplinary scholar who received his Master's in Divinity and his PhD from Princeton Theological Seminary. Welcome, Dr. Ortega. We're so glad you're here. I also want to welcome you if you're new to the congregation. If you're joining us remotely, and if you can, please say hello in the comments and let us know from where you're watching the service. If you're here in person, please join us for the social hour after worship. Either way, we invite you to go to austinuu.org, click on worship, scroll down to the link to our online visitors form. If you would fill that out, we would love to get to know you just a little bit better. Here, we welcome everyone, every beginning and path, every beautiful expression of human flowering, all pronouns, all the ways and ones we love, all abilities or disabilities, each and every one of you. You are welcome here. You belong here. We come from a long tradition of sensing that an ocean of divine love flows through each of us. And it's in that tradition that I invite you to greet the holy among us this morning, either in the comments online or by turning to those around you here at the church.
Good morning, everyone. First and foremost, it is a deep pleasure for me to bring greetings from our Board of Trustees, faculty, students, and staff to each and every one of you here present and also online this morning. So now I invite you to the moment in which we'll light our chalice. When we light this chalice, we ignite the holy circle of our covenant. A circle that can be made wide, yet remain warm. As we draw our intentions in and notice our breath coming together, we move as individuals into the covenantal community which binds us together in vulnerability, risk, and hope. As a faith community, lining the chalice is a reminder of an enduring promise that this light and warmth of this flame makes a family of strangers.
Hello again. My name is Julie Pache-Shore, and I'm your lay leader for today. I'm a fair-skinned European-American in my 50s, and I use she or they pronouns. Our call to worship today is a short but profound quote from Audre Lorde. It is not our differences that divide us. It is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences.
One of the things that binds First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin together as a religious community is that we have a common religious purpose. And for this church, that common religious purpose is our mission. The congregation wrote it together, we put it on our wall in the sanctuary, and every Sunday those attending worship say it together so that we may more readily carry it in our hearts throughout the week. Let's do so now. Together, we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community. Today, we make an offering to further our commitment to the future of Unitarian Universalism and progressive religion more broadly by giving our offering to Meadville Lombard Theological School. In a world that so badly needs a message of pluralism and love, securing the future of progressive religion is more important now than ever.
This morning, I'm going to be sharing with you a homily based on the story of a woman who reached. She has spent everything that she had searching for wholeness. The doctors could not help her. And still, somehow, she found the courage to reach. She did not ask permission. She did not wait it to be called upon. She simply reached believing that if she can just touch the hem of a garment, something might change. Our students at Meadville Lombard Theological School reach like that. They're nurses, teachers, community organizers, preparing to be chaplains. They are dreamers who have heard the calling towards ministry, towards the work of accompanying people through the hardest seasons of their lives. They have heard the call and say yes to building congregations that are truth-tellers, congregations that work towards the collaborative work of liberation, and communities that help us be grounded in the sacred work so that we can nurture ourselves and in so doing be safe havens to others. they continue to reach against all the odds with everything that they have. Meadville Lombard has been holding that reach for over 180 years. Ours is a low residence model. It's contextually based school. Our students can stay rooted in their communities while they learn, because we believe that the work of ministry happens where people are actually living. But staying in community and paying for seminary at the same time requires support that many of our students simply do not have. In the coming years, we will be celebrating 100 years of teaching in Chicago. That is a merger of two different seminaries in Lombard, Illinois, and in Pennsylvania, decided to take root in Chicago once again. And in about 3 years, we will be celebrating our centennial of teaching in Chicago. And the world we're living in makes that formation that we're still continue to offer there both courageous, one that is loving, but more importantly, justice-rooted in UU values and principles. We are preparing leaders for times more urgent than before. So today, I am inviting you to be in the community that stops, that turns around, that says, daughter, son, beloved, we see you and we will help you. When the plate comes, or when you give online today, please consider a gift to our students, particularly towards supporting their scholarship. In doing so, you are not making a donation. In fact, you are doing something more deeper than that. You are reaching back. You are completing a circle that began at the moment one of our students decided, against every practical reason not to answer the call of ministry in the service of others. That is to say that this is not a transaction. Your generosity, it is an act of grace. And for that, I thank you in advance.
Our reading is written by Margaret Wolfe, and it's titled, In Sweet Company. We sit together and I tell you things, silent, unborn, naked things, that only my God has heard me say. You do not cluck your tongue or roll your eyes at me, or split my heart into 1,000,000 pieces with words that have little to do with me. You do not turn away because you cannot bear to see your own unclaimed light shining in my eyes. You stay with me in the dark. You urge me into being. You make room in your heart for my voice. You rejoice in my joy. And through it all, you stand unbound by everything but the still small voice within you. I see my future self in you, just enough to risk moving beyond the familiar, just enough to leave the familiar in the past where it belongs. I breathe you in and I breathe you out in one luxurious and contented sigh. In sweet company, I am home at last.
This is the time in our service when we center ourselves together. We breathe together. And breathing together, we sense one another's loving presence even across virtual space. Breathing in, breathing out, we follow our breath to a deeper place inside, a place of greater wisdom, a place where we dare to imagine a future of love and justice together. That place where an ocean of divine love flows through each of us. Breathing together, we enter into a time of music and sacred quiet together. remembering that we also hold sacred the sounds of small children and even noisier adults. As we enter this time of music and quiet meditation, I invite you to keep in your mind and heart members of our community who are ill or in sorrow, and those who are celebrating joys, including Jenny Lolan and Mike Mashell, who were married in this sanctuary yesterday. Entering the meditative quiet as our music plays, let us hold that meditative quiet throughout, including when our music comes to an end.
One of the beauties and one of the joys of being Unitarian Universalist is the ability and the opportunity to be invited to dig deep into other faith traditions, to mine for wisdom that can strengthen, encourage us in our journey. It is in that spirit that I invite you to listen to a short reading from the Christian scripture, for particularly the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leader named Jairus came out when he saw Jesus, and he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hand on her so that she will be healed and lived." So Jesus went with him. And a large crowd followed and pressed all around him. And a woman who had been there, who has been subject of bleeding for 12 years, she had suffered a great deal under the care of many a doctor and had spent all that she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power and virtue have gone out from him, and he turned around into the crowd and asked, who touched me? You see the people crowding against you, his disciple answered, and yet you ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing that she what had happened to her, fell at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering. So somewhere in the dust of Galilee, there was a woman who was calculating the risk. She had probably done the math before. In fact, 12 years of it. During these 12 years of doors closing, 12 years of being waved away from the well, 12 years turned back from the market, 12 years moved to the edge of every room she tried to enter, because the law was clear about her body. In this particular culture, in particular in a patriarchal culture, her bleeding made her tameh, or ritually impure. And by extension, everyone who touched her became impure as well, which meant they could not be in community, they could not go to the synagogue, they could not go to the market. In fact, they were relegating to a life in the margins of society. The religious world of her day had a word for what she had become, and that was an outsider. So she knew the risks. She knew that they will say that if they saw her in that crowd, she knew the calculations, the social capital that she no longer had, the purity code she was violating simply by breathing near other people. She knew what reaching could cost. And yet, she reached anyway. I want to say with that moment, the decision before the action, the breath before she extended her hand, because that moment is my sermon. You see, 12 years is not a number. 12 years is, in fact, is a fact that lives in the body. It lived in her body. It is the ache that wakes you at 3 o'clock in the morning. It is the sentence that you rehearse to explain yourself, the one that you stop rehearsing because you stop being invited anywhere that required explanation. It is the slow erosion of believing that you belong anywhere, to anyone, as anyone. In the blues tradition, this territory is known. It is that low down, that dirty feeling that the world has organized itself around your absence. And the question becomes, do you accept the exile, or do you risk the rejection yet one more time? You see, she had been to the doctors. Mark, the writer of that gospel, tells us so. In his blunt and almost sardonic way, she has spent everything that she had on physicians, but did not get better. In fact, she grew worse. The medical establishment has taken her money and given her nothing. Her suffering continued. She had been failed by the systems that were supposed to help her. She had been failed, frankly. by hope itself, over and over and over again. And still, she heard of that wandering rabbi passing through the road and thought, maybe if I can just touch the hem of the garment, I might be healed. Not his face, not his hand, not made a request, not being even seen by this rabbi, but instead touch the hem, the fringe, maybe from the back, somewhere that she will not be noticed, the very edge of the fabric. She was not reaching for center stage. No, she was reaching for the margin of a margin, the uttermost thread of a possibility, perhaps the last thread. That is the faith that I read this text naming. It is not certainty. It is not any theological, philosophical correctment. It is courage. The specific courage of the person who has been told, be every available evidence that the world is not for them, and still reaches anyway. And so, in her hope and desperation, the woman finds a way to the crowd and touches the hem of the rabbi's garment and is immediately healed. Jesus turned in wonderment and asked, who has touched me? It is not the who has touched me. It is a different touch. Who has touched me? Because in this story, Jesus knows that something happened. Virtue, power, hope sprang forth from him, and something changed. And he wanted to acknowledge it. It is the question he asked, because he knew that something has indeed changed. The Greek word that the woman uses is pisti. It is a word that is translated as faith. But in the mouth of liberation theologians like Adamaria Sacidias, you call this la lucha, the struggle. It is the faith that does not wait for permission. It is the faith that presses through the crowd. And there was a crowd indeed, because Mark tells us so. He uses the word in Greek, oklos, which means the pressing of bodies, a surge of people, none of whom would have made a way for her, especially if they knew who she was. And given that the text is very explicit, that she's been suffering for over 10 years, 12 years in fact, folk knew who she was. But she moved anyway with determination. She was not invisible. She did touch the helm. And of Jesus' question, who touched me? His disciples were going around, what do you mean? There's people pressing against you everywhere. Everyone is touching you. What kind of stupid question is that? But he knew something different has happened. So he asked again, who touched me? She came forward, perhaps trembling, scared, and she told him, not part of the truth, the whole truth. And I want to pass here in that truth-telling, because the text itself says that she told him everything. The word that they use, the phrase, is pasan ten alithian, meaning the whole truth, with nothing hidden, nothing left out. That means that she likely told him not just about her healing. She likely told her about her body, what she was suffering, all the things that had happened to her in her history, the way that she was prevented from participating in family affairs, in community, the way that she was ostracized always, the shame and the cost, because she had spent everything that she had trying to be made whole. And you know what? She has the courage to do this, all of it. In public. That is not a small thing. She has spent 12 years being silent because silence was her survival. She had moved to the world trying not to be seen because being seen will carry the cost, a cost that she could no longer afford. And now, in front of a crowd that have every reason to be scandalized by her presence, she spoke the whole truth. And I think here is yet another turn. She was met by a word from Jesus. In Greek, tugather, meaning daughter. He didn't call her, you woman. He didn't call her, you there. In fact, we do not know her name. But we know that he called her, daughter. That employment, not the social category the law has assigned to her, a woman, maybe widow, but a kingship language, a term of endearment, a family language, done in a way that is public, that is declarative, that is irreversible family language. He called her, perhaps in our own language, beloved, I see you. He named her in so doing, into belonging, in front of everyone who has enforced her exile. He called her into his lineage, into the human family again, into the story of the people, not despite her suffering, but through it and from it. He called her daughter. And then he named what had happened to her with a word that carries more than America medical chart can hold. He called her sozos, which in Greek means or can be translated as be made well. It is a notion of salvation that is deeper than thinking about maybe a life after this or thinking being just well or healing. It's something deeper than that. Soho refers to a wholeness, not just of the body, but of the soul, of the mind. That is the wholeness that she was being called to fully embrace. Not just the body, to be whole in soul. And in so doing, the social body itself of the community, the relational fabric, can also be restored. Because now she herself goes back into her community anew. She had been restored to her dignity with a new name, the Beloved. She has been made whole. And in so doing, her community, her family, her friends, her associations, those who have stayed in the distance for fear of their own contamination for 12 years can be back into community. And I'm sure some hard conversations will likely have to be had in those contexts. Again, conversations that rely on the whole truth. But yet in those moments, salvation and wholeness will be possible. Because you see, in this text, the hope is that there's a difference between curing and healing, because curing can remove the symptoms, but healing restores the person to their place in the web of life. Now, you may be wondering why I speak about such a text among Unitarian Universalists. Let me tell you why. This is the point that I want to speak directly to us as Unitarian Universalists. Right. Now that I have made you a little bit uncomfortable. I think we have an affirmation of faith and a love ethics, particularly in Universalism, of wholeness, of salvation. See, the problem is of Unitarian Universalism, particularly in the Universalist tradition, is that the invitation to salvation, to wholeness, to be made restored and be in community, is always open. It is always extended. However, what do we have to do? What do we have to do to enjoy that invitation? We have to have the courage to do what? To reach. We have to have the courage to reach. In our faith, we have an affirmation of faith and the love ethics, and we know it, that every person has inherent worth and dignity. We affirm our interdependence, of which we are all part of. And this is not just pretty phrases. They are, in fact, grounded in ground our covenant. They are what we have bound ourselves to believe and to act, that this invitation is always open, that we can reach to be restored. The woman who has the flow of blood is reaching For that covenant, she knew, she had the hope that if she only touched the hem of the rabbi's clothing, he will be restored. She's reaching toward a community that might, maybe just might, recognize her worth. And instead, she finds more than that. She finds someone who calls her beloved. She's reaching because something in her, call it the image of the divine, call it reaching out for her dignity, call it a chair of the living universe, call it the irreducible flicker of the human spirit, refuses to believe that she's outside of the web. She is inside it. She's demanding to be made whole. And here is the question I want to ask you, gently and honestly, without any judgment, but also without flinching. When we reaches out towards us, do we stop? Or are we courageous to say, come? I think in Unitarian Universalism, many of us have oftentimes come like this woman to spaces such as this, reaching for wholeness, reaching for hope, reaching for a welcome. And sometimes many of us come and try to be very discreet, right? We stay in the back quietly, hoping that no one notices us, right? Then you have others like myself who make a lot of noise coming all the way through, right? Because we're there. We want to be there, but we're still reaching for a welcome, right? We want to be invited in. We want to be known as beloved, and that is a great gift. I'm going to assume that for many of you, like me, this faith community has been one of those places where we have left other communities because of differences, right? Because of being felt ostracized, because of the ways in which our identity rubbed the parameters that were considered acceptable. And it has been in places like this that we have found that welcome because we had the courage to reach out. And I hope that it continued to be so. That we can make this story our own, knowing that in this tradition, in this faith, in our love ethics, we can indeed find salvation. Salvation meaning being made whole in body, in spirit, in mind, so that we can also prepare that safe heavens for others who will be reaching out. I think that the power of this story really is not only about the reaching. It is what happens when power, when community goes out to meet her. Jesus does not continue walking. He stops. He turns around. Remember, right, that in the first part of the story, it was a member of the synagogue, someone with authority, someone with social standing who stopped Jesus and asked him, please come, my daughter is dying. Come over and save her. That's not what the woman does. She goes toward to look. But Jesus turned. He's not in a rush, right? He holds up the whole procession, right, and leaves Jairus waiting, remembering that his daughter is dying. The urgency of the powerful is pressing, and yet he stops to call that woman forward, to receive her truth, to name her, to restore her. And I think today that is a question for us as Unitarian Universalists. Who is reaching towards the hem of the garment of the faith tradition? Are we going to call them forward? Are we going to receive their truth in love and come to know them as beloved as they and ourselves become restored? So who is pressing through the crowd to find, even in the edge of what we offer, the fringe of the community, the outmost thread of belonging? Who is calculating whether the risk is worth it, whether they will be turned away one more time, or whether this here community will be one more institution that takes what little they have and leave them worth for it? Universalism for me, and his welcome, is not a posture. It is a practice. It is not a statement on the website or a door, open door policy posted anywhere. It is what happened in the moment when the interrupted one, the one who touches the helm, feels the power of acknowledgement go out to meet them. It is the stopping. It is the turning. It is the asking, who touched me? It is the receiving of the whole truth, not the sanitized version, not the version that makes us comfortable, but the whole truth of a body that has been told it is wrong, of a spirit that dare to reach despite the evidence that reaching may lead to rejection. I think that there is a person in every congregation who has been carrying in their body this suffering. There are people who carry the wounds of the law, the religious law, the social law, the laws of dominant culture that has named them the sources of contamination, when in fact the contamination may perhaps always be the law and never them. The theological claim for me at the text, at the center of this text, is radical. Power does not flow from the center to the margins. It flows from the margins to the center. It is the woman, not the synagogue ruler, who models faith. It is the unnamed outcast, not the name official, who receives wholeness. The last shall be first. The excluded shall be named. And this, not an afterthought, not in a private conversation, but in public, in front of the crowd. We are the community in this story. We may be the crowd, and also we are, when we are at our best, the power that stops, turns, and names. Let it be so.
And now join me in the words by which we extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again.
So go now forth into the week's long crowd. Go knowing that somewhere near you, someone is reaching for the edge of something, the hem of a garment, the border of a community, the fringe of a belonging that they have almost stopped believing in. Feel it. When they reach, stop, turn around, call them forward. And if you are the one who has been reaching, if you are the one who has spent years passing through a crowd that did not know you were there, know this. The power has already gone out to meet you. You have already been felt. You have already been known. Come forward, tell the whole truth. And hear the word that have always been yours, daughter, son, beloved. You are made whole. Go in peace. Amen.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.